Welcome to the REI Mastermind Network, where host Jack Haas gathers amazing stories from leaders in real estate investing. In each episode, our guests will tell you what they're doing that works, what they've tried that failed, and best of all, you'll learn actionable steps to take your real estate investing to the next level. Now, here's Jack with another value-packed episode.
We have DJ McClure on with me here today, and you can learn what his team is up to by going to nationalfloodexperts.com. And if that domain doesn't tell what we're going to be talking about today, I don't know what will. We're going to be talking about flooding and insurance and everything in between, and how you can possibly find your way to saving quite a bit of money, especially if you are dealing with flood-related properties. DJ, I really appreciate your time here today.
Likewise. I think this is a topic that hopefully a lot of your audience will find very intuitive and helpful.
So I'd be curious. I always find that there's certain occupations that seem to be accidental. How did you find your way into this niche?
Well, I really disliked what I was doing before. I had gotten into the medical sales industry in my early 30s and quickly realized that it wasn't going to be a long-term industry for me. And my background was in tennis. I was a tennis pro for all my 20s. And, you know, so I enjoy the process of solving a problem. And I met this company 6 years ago and thought it was a very interesting problem they were solving. Very small company at the time, very niche industry. And, you know, having had a prior real estate interest, this was, a great fit, and accidentally ended up in the flood expertise world.
So I'd be curious, you know, you've been in this now for 6 years. I would imagine you've seen all kinds of flood insurance and insurance in general. Let's start there. Like, what should people expect? Like, you know, I told you that being in my market, we deal with some flood zone properties on occasion, and you're required to have flood insurance at that point. What are some of those pitfalls or some things that people should probably be looking out for to make sure that they have the proper coverage?
Yeah. So what happens when you buy a property is that all federal loan programs, doesn't matter really who the originator that you're working with, all the federal loan programs for any property in a 100-year flood zone will have a flood insurance requirement. And even if the flood zone just barely touches the edge of a building, the lenders have a compliance requirement they have to pass on. And this gets overlooked quite a bit as people are underwriting the purchase of new real estate. And so what ends up happening is you get later in the closing process, and then you get this surprise email from your lender saying you have to have flood insurance. And so just as the lenders have a compliance to require it, FEMA also has, you know, some scenarios where, you know, engineers can change the flood zone to where that flood requirement can then also be removed as well.
So, you know, one of the things that we've definitely discovered is that depending on the insurance provider, costs can be all over the place, and flood insurance can be very costly in some areas. What are some questions that people should be asking to make sure that they have the proper coverage? Well, essentially, we're all, as entrepreneurs, we're always looking for the best bang for the buck, right?
That's right. Yeah, flood insurance is interesting because it's the only insurance line that's regulated and has a federal program, you know, behind it. That really standardizes the way those policies are written. And so one thing that, you know, any real estate owner should understand is what's called the full risk premium. This is a concept that FEMA has introduced in their new rating system that they brought to light really about 2 years ago. FEMA had never really changed the way their flood insurance program rating had been structured. And 2 years ago, they threw the old one out the window and basically revamped it from new. Some for better, some for, you know, more frustration for the end owner. But the full risk premium is essentially the ceiling price that flood policy will eventually get to. So if you've got a flood policy that's been in existence for, you know, say 3, 4, 5 years or more, they're kind of grandfathered in. They're being slowly increased up to that full risk premium at a rate of 18% per year. But if you go buy a brand new flood policy, you start at FEMA's ceiling price from day one. So there's some interesting scenarios you run into when you're buying a property, because also to note, flood insurance is one of the only insurances that you can assume ownership from the seller to the buyer. So if there's a particular discount and grandfathering that's in place, you can pick up their price point from today and then continue carrying forward as you approach that full risk dollar value.
Is there a process or something that we need to be aware of then to make sure that we can take over that policy? Because an 18% increase year over year, that can be pretty shocking.
Yeah, you're almost doubling every 5 years at that rate. You know, it's talking to your insurance broker, because I'll say, because we work with a lot of insurance brokers around the country. They're a big referral source for us. And it's not a procedure that is common knowledge. And I'll tell you the reason why. Before FEMA revamped their rating system, insurance broker A and B, they could both go into their insurance carrier, whoever they used, through FEMA and produce essentially the same dollar value for that flood policy. Whereas now, that's not the case. If your buyer's insurance broker goes out and quotes a brand new policy, they're likely going to get a higher number than what the seller's policy may have. So it's just a process they have to go through, some paperwork essentially that just transfers ownership.
Is there, I don't know, do you work with a particular insurance provider for this? Are you more of a broker? How does that typically work when somebody comes to you and looking for this type of thing?
Sure. So we're an engineering company by definition. So we're not writing any insurance. We work adjacently, if you will, to the scenario. So people come to us when they have a property in a flood zone that's being required for flood insurance, or maybe a property that they're going to be building. And so our engineers take it through a very comprehensive review process that we've built over, the last 9 years of the company. And we've got all these different avenues we're going through to try and create a cost savings. And you really start looking at different scenarios, such as, has the flood zone brought this property into the 100-year, kind of in a mass process? And does it have characteristics to where we could show FEMA that these 5 or 10 or however many buildings could actually be removed from the 100-year flood zone? And then FEMA will issue a special amendment for those buildings. And then onward in our process, if that's not possible, then we start really breaking down the flood policy and looking at all the engineering and characteristic variables that go into that ends dollar value to see if there's anything we can optimize, and then go to the carrier to improve the rating and lower policy costs.
What are some of those common tactics that you've run into then to help you accomplish that goal?
Well, the thing about the flood maps specifically is that, a lot of areas, they're only having their flood maps updated every 12 to 15 years. So what we're doing is, an analysis that's very specific and current day, both with the flood map that's in place and with those buildings at the ground level specifically. So we're looking at different variables of the building and then building a case to prove to FEMA that these buildings have characteristics that would exclude them from being included in this 100-year flood zone. And it's similar with the carriers, with the insurance policy. They're making assumptions in certain areas. They're using outside data sources. And so what we're doing is a very hands-on audit. Much like if someone has a tax audit and they're getting into all these nuanced scenarios, we're doing the same thing on the flood policy. And experience tells us for certain building types, which combination of variables can help get the policy costs down. And so then behind the scenes, we're putting all this information together and then really just protesting on the client's behalf, for either scenario.
What particular characteristics of the property could allow for exclusion?
Well, to keep it fairly simple to understand, what you're essentially showing is that there are topography details that would demonstrate a reduced risk compared to what the flood map is saying for that area. If you go through any area of the country, right, you're not going to just see flat land for forever. Even in, the more flat plains areas, you see variations. And so when someone builds a property, they may have brought in dirt. They could have increased the foundation height for putting in the slabs. Well, when all this stuff is done, FEMA has no idea at the federal level that any of this is being done. And so you got to think developments over the last, you know, let's say 50 years, most of the flood maps came about in the 70s. Well, there's been a tremendous amount of development, construction work within that 50-year period. And some of your flood maps have only updated a couple times around certain parts of the country. So there's a whole lot of information that's just missing. And so we're kind of filling the gap and bringing this additional layer of detail to FEMA's, you know, front porch, and then being able to actualize some of these maps.
Would some of that missing information also include what the city might be doing for mitigation, you know, through dikes and those type of systems?
Sometimes, you know, you'll see certain parts of the country doing infrastructure projects to improve flood risk for their areas, especially the more prone areas like your Houston, New Orleans, you know, that have had histories of water rising. They're constantly doing projects to be able to reduce that risk. And then consequently, when the flood maps update, you know, every 10, 15 years, it's reflecting those changes. And typically you see an improved flood map. What we're doing is we're working at a speed that is weeks, not years. And this is where you're able to see, you know, just really extreme return on investment for investors, especially some of your short-term hold type properties.
So just to remind everybody, if you are dealing with this type of scenario, you might want to rely on DJ's team by heading over to nationalfloodexperts.com. I'm going to make sure that is a clickable link in the show notes. And if you like what you've heard so far, share this episode with one of your friends. And if you're watching it on YouTube, we're going to ask you for a subscribe and a like on this video. So DJ, could you give us an example of like somebody who's come to you and you've been able to essentially pay for your services? I'd imagine you're talking about some pretty significant savings and some fairly large projects. Can you kind of give me an example of that?
Yeah, so we have a client right now that is buying a property in the New Orleans area. And that property is going to have, I think it's 12 buildings that are required for flood insurance. This is an investor we've worked with before, so he's very conscious of this. He knows that when he's buying in certain areas that this is a strategy that from day one, he's looking into. And that's what I really encourage for any person that's thinking of acquisitions in the near future. Is adding the flood zone as to something in your due diligence checklist that you're making sure that doesn't get overlooked. So we're confident that we're going to be able to get all 12 buildings out of the flood zone. He was looking at upwards of a $75,000 to $80,000 flood insurance bill that he would have to pay and demonstrate at closing. Closing set to be, you know, here in about 60 days or so. And so in removing that cost, especially this early in the process, he's going to have a lot of flexibility, not only the demonstrated value, you know, for a lot of properties, this is a million plus, you know, that NOI is going to create. And so we'll take all the data, we'll go to FEMA, we'll have this process finalized, and then he'll be able to give that to his lender. And they will remove the flood insurance requirement at that point for closing. And then what he's done in some of his properties is after closing, he may still choose to buy flood insurance, but the scenario is entirely different when the lender's not involved. You know, now that financial piece isn't being held against him when they calculate those final closing, you know, financial details. So this is a great acquisition scenario. I'll give you a second really quick case study. Is we met an investor about a month and a half ago. He had a renewal coming up at the end of December of 2023. There's only two buildings, but those two buildings were costing him $10,000 a year. And he was in the second year of ownership. And so we were able to put this particular project through FEMA's expedited channel that we have access to. And it was a week turnaround time. And he was able to avoid paying that $10,000 here in 2024. And he knows that he's going to be refinancing the debt on this deal in about 12 months also. You know, so all these things are just puzzle pieces that are adding up on the value add side for both of these scenarios, you know, to be able to cash out the return, you know, on the back end.
Well, when you, that first example you gave us, and it, and he's saving $70,000 to $80,000 a year in flood insurance because of your work, that's some pretty significant savings. And that alone could make or break a deal. I mean, This is something that's really noticeable, where a lot of other investors, if they haven't taken that step and engaged in a team such as yours, they would likely pass on that opportunity, where this fella is now going to reap those rewards.
It's definitely something that gets overlooked. And because the lenders make such a fuss about the requirement, most people just accept that it's a cost of business for those types of, you know, real estate assets. And they'll carry on for years paying the flood insurance until they come across someone like us to really come across, you know, and really protest and see if some change can be made.
So with all of that being said, like, could you kind of give us also an example of somebody who might have come to you too late in the game? Like, they would have, you know, you gave us an example, like a year later, that fella now is going to be able to refinance and make some changes to a property that's $10,000 a year. But I would imagine you've run into somebody who's had this property for 20 years and they engaged you and they could have saved a significant amount over time.
You're absolutely right. We've had, you know, a number of clients over the years where they've owned an asset 5 years, 10 years, and they'll say, I wish I'd met you 5 to 10 years ago. The good thing about what we do, both with the insurance carriers and with the flood maps, is that we can apply these solutions at really any point in the life cycle. You know, so it's not uncommon. Someone's going to list their property for sale and their real estate brokers, you know, maybe worked with us before, and we'll try to put a solution in place before they list it for sale. Similarly, when built properties are going into a refinance, sometimes they don't realize that when they switch from like more of a, you know, short-term bridge loan into like an agency loan, like a Fannie Freddie scenario, that their flood insurance requirements are going to be a much higher limit given Fannie's, you know, specific requirements for flood zones. You know, so obviously the sooner we can meet people, the more we can educate them on some of these scenarios coming down the road. But regardless, if someone's refinanced and, you know, Fannie Mae wanted them to put full replacement value, because this can bubble someone's flood insurance cost, you know, into $100,000 plus fairly quickly. Well, just the same, we can make Fannie's requirements go away. And then that's a huge cash flow increase for the remaining years of that asset.
Yeah, when you're talking about properties, that it sounds like some fairly large projects. I would imagine that reducing the flood insurance cost or eliminating it altogether probably also has a direct relationship to the actual value of that property.
Oh, I mean, average cap rate, you know, would be, let's say, 6%. So, you know, for every $15,000 in savings, you're adding $250,000 in value to, you know, about any commercial real estate asset. So yeah, with some of these larger projects, we've definitely seen some fairly happy clients once they've gone through the refi and sale process, you know, afterwards.
So it sounds like you really work hand in hand with, you got your hands in a lot of things. You're probably talking to the insurance provider. You're talking to the business owner. You're probably talking to engineers, people on the ground. What type of strategies have you learned to use to keep all these balls in the air?
Well, I like to describe our company as really putting three knowledge bases all under one roof. You know, that being the engineering side, all of the engineering work we do in-house. The insurance expertise is something that we've layered on top. So our president, he's our original engineer. He has a background having worked in the insurance industry years ago as well. So he really bridged those two knowledge bases together. And then the third peg of the chair, so to speak, is the real estate understanding. And so really being able to understand different scenarios that our clients are facing, and then what's the insurance impact? How do we solve it with engineering-based solutions? And then how do we really walk our clients and position them for the best possible exit, or, you know, next however many years, if they're holding that asset, you know, it's possible.
Just to remind everybody, it's nationalfloodexperts.com. That's going to be a clickable link in the show notes. Like and subscribe to this channel. And DJ, this has been a very interesting conversation. You can tell, you know, we mentioned before we even hit record that I'm kind of dealing with some flood zones myself in a couple of the markets we work in. And so I probably was a little selfish with a couple of my questions, But again, it is nationalfloodexperts.com. But before we switch over to the rapid fire questions, I was hoping you could tell me if there was a question or concept you think we should have tried to cover in this core part of the program.
You know, I think it's what should I always ask a seller for when I'm buying a property in a flood zone? You know, when you get into due diligence and you have a little more access to this information from the seller, you know, trying to get a copy of their flood policies. Because like I was saying earlier, there may be a particular advantageous price point that they have that you could potentially assume ownership. And that's not something that's just common practice. So you want to make sure you're asking for that. You want to try to get any kind of elevation data, whether it's elevation certificates or topography that the owner may have. So you can take possession of all these things. And if you have all those, you can kick those same documents to a team like mine. And we can do this comprehensive review and figure out as early as possible if some of these solutions are able to be executed for your property. But then once you have that information, you can have a much more intelligent conversation with your insurance broker. You can also, once you have the seller's policies, you can start forecasting what your actual policy increases would be for the subsequent years. So it's going to help make your underwriting, you know, a little bit more precise, because a T12 doesn't break out flood insurance. It's just going to group all the insurance together. So getting a little more granular with this line item specifically, you know, again, it just helps reduce the number of surprises that you're going to have, you know, later in the process.
Yeah, I was especially in knowing that, and maybe I'm putting words in your mouth, but I would imagine that a lot of realtors are probably not skilled enough to know to ask for these things on your behalf either.
Everyone stays in their lane, right? Everyone's got their expertise. They've got different problems that they're trying to help solve. You know, so commercial real estate, it's a complicated acquisition process. And so you've got the broker there to help, you know, really check off all the things that's in their wheelhouse. You've got your insurance broker trying to do their piece. You know, property insurance is obviously the biggest cost. So that's going to be generally the most focused item on the insurance side. You've got your mortgage broker. They're trying to make sure that they can hit all their compliance pieces so you can get to the closing without delay. Somewhere in there, somebody should be thinking about the flood zone, and we're that extra team member, you know, because real estate's a team sport. And this is something that when given attention, there can be, you know, some fruitful resolutions.
Well, thanks again, DJ. This has been great. And if you're ready, we'll just jump into the rapid fire questions as we close out this episode.
Sure.
What lie do real estate investors tell themselves and sometimes to others?
They tell themselves that my property is not in the flood zone. You know, there's lots of things that can help, like, really make someone arrive at that conclusion. But in reality, when a flood zone's touching a building, it's going to be required by a lender. So it's something that gets passed along. That's how buyers end up 2 weeks before closing, thinking their property is not in a flood zone, and then surprisingly find out otherwise.
Do you have a book recommendation, or what are you reading right now?
I like Executive Ownership. It's a book that I've read in the past. I'm about to listen to it again here at the start of 2024. I like the audiobook because the author reads it himself. He's a former Navy SEAL. He's got a particular energy into his audiobook. It's a fantastic, fantastic business book.
I'm going to spring another one on you, because, and I didn't give you this one before, but as a former professional tennis player, what lessons did you learn on the court that you brought to the business world?
Well, it's a great question. So tennis, interestingly, is a game of failures. You know, in an average tennis match, you know, you're going to make just an insane number of mistakes constantly in order to win more points than the other guy ultimately. And business is the same. If you're not afraid to take some risk and make some mistakes, you're never going to, you know, improve to the levels that you want to.
If you could go back in time and give your younger self one piece of advice, what would it be?
It'd be spending more time listening to podcasts like this. I would have a much different real estate portfolio at, you know, almost 40 years old had I had a little bit different influence, you know, in my 20s.
Well, I appreciate hearing that. So you should listen to DJ and like and subscribe.
100%.
What single strategy, process, or tool have you implemented in your business to have a direct time-saving impact?
It's a great question. So we're in an age of technology, and I think if we're not using it, then we're not moving at the speed we could be. For our team, we implemented a tool that's called Groove. It's very similar to like Outreach or Sales Loft, if you've heard of any of those. Groove's native to Salesforce. That's part of where we liked it, because our CRM has been with Salesforce from the beginning. But there's a lot of automations built in to allow us to be able to really get information out, to be able to organize some of our sales efforts that I think can be utilized in any industry, realistically. Just like a syndicator is trying to get education out to their investor pool. You know, so there's a lot of things that can be really done efficiently we've really liked about this software.
Well, I'm going to spin off of that a little bit because, oddly enough, DJ, there's a CRM in the market for real estate investors called Real Deal CRM that provides that exact functionality that you're talking about, and through automation, and does some of that automation and to help with the consistent, persistent behavior that real estate investors have to provide. But I really appreciate that, DJ. It's been great chatting with you. Great meeting you. You brought a ton of value to this episode. Again, it is nationalfloodexperts.com. It was great meeting you, and I hope you come back again sometime.
Thank you.
Have you learned at least one actionable step to incorporate into your real estate investing? If so, please consider returning some of that value by leaving a positive review, subscribing to our YouTube channel, or joining our growing network on Facebook and Twitter. You can find links to all of our social media accounts in the show notes. See you next time.